are in the middle of the second chapter of Tanya, which if it's so early on in Tanya, it means it's foundational. It means there's some building blocks that we're going to need for our understanding to understand the concepts that are coming up. And the first idea that we were introduced to was the fact that our second soul is godly. Our first soul is our animal, human, biological soul. That's the one that we relate to. It's what gives us the need to eat, drink, and take care of bodily needs. And then, being Jewish, we have a second soul, which is unique to the Jewish people, and it's a divine soul. It is literally chelek eloka mima'al, mamish, which means literally. It is literally part of Hashem, above. And we start to look at the disparity between souls and say, one second, we all come from the same place. We all come from the same place, from Chachma Ilah, the supernal wisdom, and yet we look around and we see that people are very different. There are some people who exude holiness and there are some people who clearly do not, but we come from the same place. How did that happen? And that's because everybody starts out from Chachma Ilah, but we've come through the downward gradation of the world, a spiritual evolution. And some souls take on the consciousness of a lower world and still a lower world until some of us have such a low consciousness, it's like the consciousness of a toenail. And why are we using the example of a toenail? Because it's the same idea of pregnancy. It all starts out with one seminal point. But then as it stays in the mother's womb for 9 months, it becomes fleshed out. And from that very same point come a brain, a heart, arms, legs, and even toenails. But if you're going to look at the DNA of it all, it's all the same. It all comes from the same place. So now that we've evolved, and even though we've come from the supernal wisdom, Chachma Ilah, but maybe we have taken on the consciousness of a toenail. How do we identify with our deepest self, which is the supernal wisdom, which is literally one with Hashem? How do we do that? Well, we connect ourselves to somebody who never took on the lower consciousness, to the heads of the Jewish people, to people who didn't go through that whole evolution. They still have the consciousness of a brain. They still identify with their original source. Just like in the child's body, the nail, how does it have life force? Through the brain. The brain is like life central and it channels to everything. So too with us. When we connect ourselves to tzaddikim, we get to know ourselves better. It's not like the tzaddik has a closer connection to Hashem and they connect us. No, we're all connected to Hashem. But the tzaddik is aware of his connection. And because he's aware of his connection, he exudes holiness. He radiates holiness. And that allows us to know about our own selves. And we realize about ourselves that we are truly part of Hashem. So knowing what we know, that through connecting to a tzaddik, we get to know our own self better, it gives us now a deeper understanding of what it means to be attached to holy people. And that's what the Alter Rebbe is going to talk about right now. Okay, so now we're going to understand something very important. Uvazet yuvan maimer rabbeinu zechorinam avracha al pasuk uladav kabay. Shekol hadavik besalmidei chachamim ma'ale alav hakasuv ki'ilu nidvak bashchina mamish. This explains the comment of our sages on the verse, and cleave unto him, concerning which the question arises, how can mortal man cleave to God? So the Torah says to cleave to him. And the Talmud asks, can a mortal man cleave to God? That's the question of the Talmud. In answer, our sages comment, he who cleaves to a Torah scholar is deemed by the Torah to have actually become attached to the Shekhinah, the divine presence. And it's mamish, literally. When we attach ourselves to a Talmud Chacham, it's like we cleave to the Shekhinah. What does it mean, cleave to the Shekhinah? When the Shekhinah is manifest, you can see godly energy. You can see holiness. Somebody who is connected to a tzaddik has a place that they are now manifesting and radiating holiness, even if they are of a lower consciousness. There's an amazing story of a very simple chassid of the Alter Rebbe, and he would daven with so much devotion, but it was very curious because he was simple to the point that they didn't know if he actually knows the meaning of some of the difficult words in prayer. And three prayers a day, the way he davened, the way he prayed, was with such holiness. And so finally, somebody asked him, they said, I don't get it. What do you pray with? Like, what are your intentions when you're praying? And of course, they were asking in a way to learn. Like, here is a simple man. He doesn't necessarily understand everything that he's saying. And yet you can see he's connecting to Hashem. And he said, I pray with what I learned from my Rebbe, the Alter Rebbe. The Alter Rebbe said like this, Shamor v'zachor b'dibor echad. When Hashem gave us the Torah, we have two recountings of it in the Torah. And in one place about Shabbos, it says Shamor es Yom HaShabbos, guard the day of Shabbos. In another place, it says Zachor es Yom HaShabbos, remember the day of Shabbos. So is it Shamor or is it Zachor? What did Hashem say? So the Talmud says, Shamor v'zachor b'dibor echad. Hashem actually said both of those words at the same time. We can't do that, but he did. So anyway, that's the source of this statement, but he interpreted it like this. Shamor v'zachor b'dibor echad. Every single word that you say, b'chol dibor v'dibor, every single word that you say, shamor, guard, v'zachor, and remember, echad, the oneness of Hashem. And that's how I pray. With every word I say, I remember the oneness of Hashem. And here's an example of somebody who was simple. Maybe he had a holy soul, a soul from a very high origin, but maybe he didn't. Maybe he had the soul with a consciousness of a toenail. But he connected to a tzaddik. He applied his teachings. And when he prayed, and I'm sure when he acted, he sounded like he was a person of a very uplifted character. He exuded holiness. And this is because by connecting to a tzaddik, he was literally connecting with the Shekhinah. And to connect with the Shekhinah means you manifest holiness. So now we understand, what does it mean that our Chachamim say, how do you cleave to Hashem, cleave to a tzaddik? It's because we're really one body. All the Jewish people are one body. Not all of us feel our essence. Some of us do feel our essence. Those that have the consciousness of the mind, that never had to go through a descent and to think of themselves as something else. When we connect to Godliness Central, the place where holiness is manifest, the place where a person totally identifies with their deepest core, then we come in touch with our own deepest space. And we are cleaving to the Shekhinah, we are radiating the Shekhinah. And again, when we say Talmidei Chachamim, Torah scholars, it's not just about having a lot of Torah knowledge. We're talking about someone who has that unique personality where they're extremely humble and they're a channel to the divine. Something really amazing, you know, in the Talmud, there's a lot of arguments between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. Two schools, they argued a lot what the halacha is. The Talmud says, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, both these and those are the words of the living God. They all had truth to them, but the halacha almost always followed Beis Hillel. So the Talmud asks, since these and those are both the words of the living God, why was the halacha like Beis Hillel? And the Talmud answers, "Mepnei shehin neichin va'aluvin." They were easygoing and they were forbearing. If someone insulted them, they didn't return it. And when they were saying their opinion, they would say the opinion of Beis Shammai as well. And not only that, they would first say the opinion of Beis Shammai. So they would say, "Our esteemed colleagues from the school of Shammai say such and such, and we beg to differ, and we say such and such." And so the halacha was like them. Well, that's very nice, but you know, the Talmud says that the school of Shammai, Beis Shammai, was chadidin tefei, they were sharper. So I get you're nice, but what does that have to do with anything? It's just who's smarter. I mean, they were both smart. That isn't the issue here. But the issue is not who's smarter. It's who is more humble. Who is more yielding to the divine core? If somebody is humble, then they are a channel for the divine. Then the halacha comes through them. And that's what we're talking about. Somebody who studies Torah, but not just studies Torah, personifies Torah, connects to Hashem through the Torah. When we connect with someone like that, who truly has a consciousness of their original source, then we connect with our original source. And by cleaving to them, it's literally like we're cleaving to the Shekhinah. This seems difficult to comprehend. How can one equate cleaving to a Torah scholar with cleaving to the Shekhinah? However, in light of the above, this is readily understood. Ki al yedei devika b'samidei chachamim, kishurais nefesh ruach u'neshama sho'ame ha'aretz, u'miyuchadais b'mahusan harishain, v'sharsham shebechachma ila'a. For through attachment to the scholars, the nefesh, ruach, and neshama of the simple folk are bound up and united with their original essence and their root in supernal wisdom, shehu yisbarech v'chachmasei echad v'hu hamadachulei, and thereby connecting with Hashem himself, since he and his wisdom are one, and he is the knowledge, like we visited before at class. So through connecting to Talmidei Chachamim, we connect with our own original source in Chachma Ila'a, and Hashem's wisdom is truly one with himself. Okay, so now that we know what we know, and that all Jewish people get their life energy through the Talmidei Chachamim, through the leaders of their generation, then what about those people who are not quite tight with the Torah scholars and, in fact, are against them, rebel against them, hate them at least superficially? Are we going to say that they don't have divine life force? It's like, think about a toenail that's been cut off, so it's no longer connected to the brain, and they don't have life force. And Altar is going to say that's not true. Even someone who rebels against Talmidei Chachamim gets their nurture from the Talmidei Chachamim, but in a different kind of way. As for those who willfully sin and rebel against the Torah sages, how do they receive their spiritual nurture and life? Spiritual life and nurture flow only where there is a desire to nurture and give life. In answer to this, the text continues, Yenikas nefesh ruach u'neshama shalahem mibchinas achayrayim shal nefesh ruach v'nishmas talmidei chachamim. The nurture of their nefesh, ruach, and neshama comes from the hind part, as it were, of the nefesh, ruach, and neshama of the scholars. Okay, so what does that mean, nurture from the hind part? Nurture from the hind part can be understood by way of comparison to one who gives an object to his enemy, obviously not out of a true desire to give, but rather due to some external factor. The grudging reluctance with which he gives will be reflected in his manner. He will turn away from him, tossing the object to his enemy over his shoulder. The same is true in the spiritual sphere. When spiritual nurture is given unwillingly, it is described as coming from the hind part of the giver, the external level of nurture. Nevertheless, even those who rebel against the sages receive some measure of spiritual nourishment from them. For every soul, without exception, must be bound up with its root and source, as explained earlier. The level of nurture they receive, however, is from the hind part of the souls of the sages. And this is a very interesting concept, the hind part. We will visit this a lot in Tanya. One example that Rabbi Steinsaltz gives is a knife. What's the inner part of the knife? What is it meant for? The blade. Now, in order to have the blade, you also need the dull part of the knife. You need the backside of the knife in order to have the front part of the knife. So the backside of the knife is the hind part. Or another analogy given is a king wants to throw a party for his closest friends. Now, in order to make the party more memorable, he needs to invite other people that are not his close friends. So who is the party for? The close friends. The other people who are there at the party enjoying the food and the drinks and part of the crowd, they're the hind part. They're not the original intent. They're the outer aspect of the intent. Or another example Rabbi Steinsaltz gives is a speaker gives a lecture. So there's the deep ideas in the lecture, and then there are the jokes and the anecdotes. Some people remember the jokes and the anecdotes, but they don't remember the actual content. That's the hind part. And some people remember the deeper meaning, and that's the inner space. So when someone is close to a Talmud Chacham, and they consciously want to receive from them, they're getting with a place of face-to-face. You know, like we say in the priestly blessing, Ya'er Hashem panav elecha, Hashem should shine his face upon you. Shining a face means it's face to face, there's love, there's intimacy, there's closeness. The example given is also in Teshuvah. This is in a discourse of the Alter Rebbe, where he talks about two people who are face to face and they're so close to each other, but what if they turn to each other back to back? They're so close in proximity, but they couldn't be further from each other. They're back to back. And that's how it is with people who rebel against the Torah scholars. They need to get their life energy from them. That's where it's flowing, through the brain. But they're not getting it in a way of a shining countenance. They're getting it in a way of back to back. And it's not because the sage has turned their back. It's because they have chosen to accept in that manner. They have chosen to turn their back on the sage. And so in this way, they receive nurture, yenika. That's what the Alter Rebbe says. He doesn't use the word chayas. He doesn't use the word life energy. He only uses the word nurture. Because somebody who rebels against their brain, they don't exude life energy. They're not somebody who you look at them and they're davening and they're doing mitzvahs with love and passion and shining godly light. No, if they're rebelling against Torah sages, they definitely have nurture, but they don't have life energy. They're not manifesting the Shekhinah. There's an incredible story of the Hasidic master Reb Levi Yitzchak Mipartichev. He was known for such love of a fellow Jew. He always judged every Jew favorably. He saw them doing something that was so questionable, and he would immediately find something good about them. And surprisingly, people don't know this, he faced a lot of opposition. There was a lot of animosity towards him. And in his own community in Berdichev, there was a man who really, I don't want to use the word hate, but at least on a superficial level, hated him and did everything he could to make things difficult for Reb Levi Yitzchak. And he decided he wants to shame him. And it was Erev Yom Kippur. And he knew that a lot of people come to pray in Rabbi Levi Yitzchak's shul on Yom Kippur. They loved the upliftment, and Rabbi Levi Yitzchak had a very beautiful voice. He was the advocate. He was known as the advocate for the Jewish people. So this detractor of his came to him Erev Yom Kippur, and he said, Rabbi, I want to speak to you in private. And he said, sure, come in. He brought him into his study, and he said, it's Erev Yom Kippur. I want to ask you for forgiveness. And Rabbi Levi Yitzchak said, of course, with my full heart. He said, I don't know if you actually forgive me. Would you say L'chaim with me? And Rabbi Levi Yitzchak said, yes. Now, this man's plan was to get Rabbi Levi Yitzchak drunk so that either he walks into shul vomiting or tipsy, and what a dishonor to him on Yom Kippur. But he takes the L'chaim, and he says, I forgive you, and you know we're friends. And he says, Rabbi, something in my heart tells me you don't really forgive me. Can we do it again? And he said, yes. Anyway, this went on a few times, and he left, and he felt so good about himself. He's going to come to shul, and he's going to see Rabbi Levi Yitzchak a mess on Yom Kippur, and everybody's going to be there. So what a crowd was in his shul on Yom Kippur. Anyway, night comes, Kol Nidre starts, and Rabbi Levi Yitzchak is not drunk, and he's praying with fervor, not a trace of the alcohol. And then after prayers, he sits down to say Tehillim. A lot of people, after prayers on Yom Kippur, they sit down, they want to do the whole Tehillim. And Rabbi Levi Yitzchak is reading the Tehillim out loud. And he gets to chapter 41, and he starts to say, "Bezayis yadayti ki chafasta bi ki la yariya ayvi alai," which literally translated means, this is how I know, Hashem, that you desire me, that my enemies will not be able to harm me. But he translates it differently. He starts translating it in Yiddish, and he says, he repeats it, he reads it first, and he repeats it again. And he says, this is how I know that you desire me, Hashem. How do I know you love me if you're not going to harm my enemies because of me? And that man heard Rabbi Levi Yitzchak say those words, and he suddenly had teshuva. He said, how could this be? He loves me so much, and I work so hard to make his life miserable. And he became a follower of Rabbi Levi Yitzchak. So this is somebody who started out back to back, but through the love of the tzaddik, he turned around. And in fact, that's what teshuva is. Teshuva is turning around. You could be in the same place, but it's just a turn. It's a switch of consciousness. So much has to do with literally that thought in our mind. That story of Rabbi Elazar ben Dordaya, he was called Rabbi after he already passed away, who committed every sin in the book, and he died crying in teshuva. And when he died, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi cried, and he said, "Yesh kaina ilmai b'sha achas." There's somebody who acquires his next world b'sha achas in one. Is usually translated as sha'a, hour or moment. Just in one moment, he acquired his next world. But there's another way to reach sha'a. It doesn't just mean moment. It doesn't just mean time. It also means turn. Like Vayisha Hashem el Hevel, Hashem turned towards Hevel. There are people who acquire their next world just in one moment of turn. One moment they change their consciousness around from being back to back to being face to face. So while somebody is back to back, they still receive nurture from Talmidei Chachamim. But they're receiving it not from the inner aspect, they're receiving it from a backhanded way, not in a way of pleasure and love and desire, but in a way of, well, here you go. That's what you need and that's what you're going to get. Okay, so we just finished this section, and that is about us connecting to tzaddikim. And through us connecting to tzaddikim, we get connected to our own deepest space. And that is true even with people who rebel against Talmidei Chachamim. They're not connecting to their deepest space, but they're still receiving nurture through the souls of these tzaddikim who are the brain of the Jewish people. Just as every part of the body receives life force and nurture through the brain, each one of us, being connected to each other, receives our life force and energy through the brain, which are the tzaddikim and the Torah scholars of our generation. And the truth is, of all generations, because holy souls are all connected and they are like a channel. And as history progresses, we're one body, starting from the beginning of time till the end of time. And in each generation, we're one body. And there's the head, and then there's the all other aspects of the body. Okay, so now we're going to look at a teaching from the Zohar, which we're going to have to look at through the lens of what we learned. Because we learned that the divine soul comes literally from Hashem. It's part of Him. And because it's from Hashem, there's really nothing that we can do on our part that affects it. Meaning, it's not our choice what kind of soul we got. It's not our parents' choice what kind of soul we got. And it's not the choice of parents or the person what kind of consciousness their soul has taken on through the devolution of the worlds. We're going to look at this teaching of the Zohar, which seems to imply that parents choose the level of their child's soul. And the altar is going to explain what does that mean. Having concluded that every Jew has a holy soul, which emanates from above, from supernal wisdom, the Alter Rebbe now states that even the quality, the rank or level of each individual soul is determined only by factors from above, spiritual factors, such as the soul's above mentioned descent through his Stalshlet. So not only does the holy soul come directly from Hashem without any of our input, even the level it takes on, only from Hashem, not with any of our input. No actions of this physical world can determine its quality and rank. The Alter Rebbe makes this statement indirectly by clarifying a quotation from the Zohar, which seems to indicate the contrary. Umasha kasov bazaihar, uvazaihar chadash, shaha ikar taloi, sheikadish asme b'shash tashmish davka. As for what is written in the Zohar, and in Zohar chadash, that the essential factor is conduct oneself in a holy manner during sexual union, masha ein kein b'nei ami ha'aretz chule, which is not the case with the children of the simple folk, and their ilk who do not conduct themselves thus, the simple folk, as the Zohar goes on to imply, draw down for their child a soul of a lower level, which seems to indicate that an action occurring in this physical world can in fact affect the soul's level. Not so, declares the Alter Rebbe. The Zohar is not referring to the soul at all, but to the spiritual garment as follows. So look, we're looking at the Zohar. The Zohar tells us that parents, when they conduct themselves in a holy manner during their union, they draw down nafsha'in kadishin, holy souls for their child. And if people do not conduct themselves that way, then they draw down a soul of a much lower level, very low level. So that seems to imply that parents actually do have a say in what kind of soul, and actions from below here can affect the kind of soul that a child gets. So the Alter Rebbe explains it's not actually the soul, it's the garment of the soul. Hainu mishum she'ein lacha nefesh ruach u'neshama, she'ein la levush mi nefesh te'atzmus aviv ve'imai. This is because no nefesh, ruach, and neshama is without a garment which stems from the nefesh of its father's and mother's essence. So it's not the actual soul, it's the garment of the soul. The garment of the soul is what allows the soul to express itself. What is the garment? Actually, in Hasidic sources, the Mittel Rebbe, this is the son of the Alter Rebbe, he wrote down teachings of his father from the Zohar, and he explains that the garment of the divine soul is the animal soul. Our human consciousness, the spiritual consciousness, not just the actual body, but our life energy in the body, that human biological soul, the quality of that soul is what is determined by the parents. The parents, through their holiness, determine what level garment this child gets. Let's talk about it and then we'll explore.
You mean what level garment of divine soul?
What garment to the divine soul, meaning what level animal soul does their child get? The garment to the divine soul is the animal soul. I'll actually read you what the Mitzvah Rebbe writes in B'Yirei Zohar. He says, Yesh l'chol neshama b'chinas levush. Every divine soul has a quality of a garment. V'hu nefesh ha-bahamas. It is the animal soul. Shenikra levush. It is called the garment. L'halbash l'nefesh aleki. In order to cloak the divine soul. And then he goes on to write, what does the quality of this garment depend on? B'tivam b'nafsham ha-chiyunis. On the nature of the father's and mother's vivifying soul in intellect and emotion. So our nature affects our children's nature. And when it comes to the soul, that comes directly from Hashem. Parents don't get to choose what kind of soul their child gets. What do they get to choose? What do they have influence on? What kind of animal soul they have? Now, the grandson of the Alter Rebbe wrote that the levush is the nefesh hasichlis, which is the intellectual soul. Because sometimes we speak of three souls. In Tani, we speak of two. The divine soul and animal soul. There's a third soul, the intellectual soul. But if we divide them just in two, then the intellectual soul is part of the animal soul. So it's not really a contradiction. It's just how are we looking at it? Are we talking about the totality of the animal soul? Or are we talking about the aspect of the intellectual soul? But whatever it is, this is what is determined by the parents.
Are you talking about thought, speech, and action?
No, not talking about thought, speech, and action. When we're talking about like garments of the soul and we say thought, speech, and action, that's something else. Here we're talking about the actual whole animal soul with its intellect and emotions, the totality of the animal soul is determined by the parents.
So your intellect is like your ability to question, to think about the way you think about things, the way you look at things.
Exactly. The way you think about things, the way you look about at things, your mindset, your natural way of relating to yourself, the way you relate to others, that's all based on the animal soul. So any soul that comes down here, it can't just act on a body. It needs help. And that Rizal says it needs help either way. Either it's an old soul and it came down here again. And because it came down here again to rectify something, its previous sins get in the way, so it needs help. Or it's a new soul and it's completely unfamiliar. And because it's unfamiliar, it needs help. So it needs the help of this garment. What is the function of this garment? V'chol ha-mitzvah sha'aseh ha-kol al-yedei aseh ha-levush. All the mitzvahs, the commandments that it fulfills, are influenced by that garment. It is through this garment that the soul achieves its ability to affect the body and to perform the commandments involving physical matters. Remember, the divine soul is purely spiritual and holy. It does not have a direct relationship with the body. Writes that without the power of the animal soul, the divine soul would not affect the body at all because it is spiritual and the body is physical and corporeal. The intermediary between them, between the body and the divine soul, is the vitalizing animal soul clothed in man's blood. So this is the garment. All the mitzvahs that we do, the divine soul cannot act directly on the body. It has to act through the medium of the animal soul. The animal soul is the garment. So like we discussed before, what is a garment? It's something that hides, so it obscures the holiness of the divine soul. It's also something that manifests. You see things through a garment. You can tell if a person's wealth through their garment. You can see the weather or the temperature through their garment. You can see something about their personality through their garment. Their garment is what allows them even to present themselves to others. So through the animal soul is how the divine soul manifests. So on one hand, the animal soul obscures the holiness of the divine soul. On the other hand, if somebody has an elevated, refined garment, it makes it easier for the divine soul to manifest through it. And it's not just the things that they do are through the garment, but there's another aspect. V'afilu ha-shefa sh'naisnim lay min ha-shamayim ha-kol al-yedei levush zeh. Even the benevolence that flows to one from heaven is all given through that garment. Because the soul is so strongly bound up with this garment, the Zohar refers to the garment in this context as the person's soul. So the Zohar says the parents determine the quality of the soul. It's not the actual soul. It's the garment to the soul. It's the animal soul. But because a person so deeply is bound up with it and the soul only expresses itself through it, that's why the Zohar is calling it the soul. But it's not the soul. It's the garment to the soul. And when a person has an elevated, refined animal soul, it is much easier for them to, first of all, perform the mitzvahs. And second of all, everything that they get from heaven is through the medium of that garment. So if they have like a skewed mindset because they have such a coarse garment, it's harder for them to accept the bounty that comes to them from heaven. Just a spiritual reality, a spiritual energy that enlivens the body and allows the divine soul to express itself through it. And now I want to talk about what does it mean to be holy in the marital union. First of all, here's an important reason for parents to keep Taharas HaMishpacha, mikvah. And I heard something very interesting, that Sephardic Jews are usually more spiritually inclined. And they're like, if you ask them, you know, do you want to do a mitzvah? They're more easily to say yes. And because traditionally among the Sephardim, mikvah was much more upheld. That's first of all. So mikvah is very important. If somebody only found out about mikvah later on in life and they've already had children from unions before that without knowing, the power of teshuva is very great. And when they go to the mikvah with the power of teshuva, teshuva is like, there's only one reality that we know of that's an actual time machine, that you can go back in time and affect things. Teshuva. And when parents have thoughts of teshuva and they evolve and they elevate themselves, it has a refining effect on their whole family, including the children that were already born. And of course, each of us, whatever garment we have, but we still have the job of elevating our own garment. Okay, this is what you got, but what are you going to do about it? There's a story that Rabbi Steinzel writes in his book, which the first time I read the story, I'm like, I don't think I should share the story at class because it's like, it almost is like too like, okay, that's it. Too bad for you. But it's a story of Rabbi Uri of Starlisk, who was known as the Seraph, the burning angel, the fire angel. He came from a very simple family. And he said, you know, if my father would have gone to mikvah, his father, he's talking about, if he would have gone to mikvah even one time in his life, my divine service would have been so much easier for me. So I'm thinking, okay, poor guy, you know, you had like this father who didn't care much for spirituality, but actually look who he became. He became a great Hasidic master who was known as the burning fiery angel, so he was able to surpass the garments that his parents bequeathed him. So yeah, you get what you get, and you could get upset, but what are you going to do about it now? Now you have to say, this is the garment that you had, and now, through your own efforts, each of us has to do teshuva in our own way, and we work past it, and we grow, and we develop, and we refine our animal soul. And then, second of all, besides the actual purity of mikvah, a couple has to have the right spiritual intentions when they are together. There's a great book by Manus Friedman called The Joy of Intimacy. And if you look at the Rambam, where he talks about the halacha from the Talmud, what are the right conditions for a couple to be together? Neither of them should be intoxicated. They shouldn't be angry. They shouldn't be thinking of other people. They shouldn't be thinking of divorce. Neither of them should be sleeping. What are all of those things? All of those things are saying both of them should be fully present. There has to be a fusion of mind and spirit. And that is an act of holiness. If you look at the Holy Temple, the holiest place in the Holy Temple was the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies, and in there was the cherubim, the kruvim. They were male and female, and when Hashem was happy with the Jewish people, they were intertwined with each other. It reflected the love of Hashem to the Jewish people. The Holy Shelah writes in his writings about intimacy, he says, "De'u banai, you should know my children, ki ein kedusha bechol ha-kedushes ki kedushas hazivug. There is no holiness among all holinesses like the holiness of the marital union. Im hu bekedusha, umekadish atzmei betashmish kasher hizhiru razal, ki az hu kedmus vetzelem ha-elyain, umeir hazivug ha-elyain. If it is done in holiness, and one sanctifies himself during relations as our sages admonished, then he is like the supernal image and likeness, arousing a supernal union." So Talmud says that when a man and his wife are meritorious, the Shekhinah rests among them. When they unite in holiness and fusion of mind and spirit, that is the greatest level of holiness that they can achieve, and they bring down for their child, who was conceived at that time, a holy garment. Now, it's not just when they are conceiving a child, but actually, every single time a couple is together, they are affecting the entire spiritual world. The Zohar talks about Avram and Sarah, and the Torah says, "Vatihi Sarai Akara Ein La Valad." Sarai was barren, she had no child. And the Zohar asks a question. It says that she was barren, so why do we have to know that she didn't have a child? Isn't that the same thing? The Zohar says, from the fact that the Torah tells us that Sarai was barren, don't we already know that she had no child? What does it mean, she had no child? Rather, this is what the head of the yeshiva said. And we're talking about the head of the yeshiva in Gan Eden. "A child she did not give birth to, but she gave birth to souls. Through cleaving with desire of those two righteous people, they cleave to each other with desire and love for each other, they would give birth to the souls of the converts. The whole time that they were in Haran, just as Tzaddikim do in Gan Eden, as it is written, Ve'es ha-nefesh asher asu v'charan, and the souls which they made in Haran." So a physical child wasn't born to Avram and Sarah, but souls were coming down. And that is true every time a couple is together in holiness, they bring souls. It's something really incredible is a letter from Rabbi Moshe Galanti, a great Kabbalist, who wrote a letter to a couple that was not able to bear children. And they were very sad. And they thought that every time that they're together, it's like almost wasteful. And he said, no. He said, I'm going to tell you a statement in the Holy Zohar from Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, a handwritten note. It's a handwritten commentary on the verse from Yeshaya. Ve'amart bilvaveich, mi yalad li es eila, and you shall say in your heart, who has borne me these? Rabbi Shimon said, a person should always fill the mitzvah of conjugal relations with his wife for the sake of heaven. For every seminal omission that a man experiences with his wife, even if she is barren or old, they don't go to waste. Rather, the Holy One, blessed be He, commands an appointed angel to safeguard them for the future and to prepare a body for each one, resulting in numerous offspring. All the seminal emissions that the individual believed were being squandered due to his wife's failure to conceive, each of them will manifest as his sons and daughters, and each child will recognize their father. Hence, the person will ponder in their heart, Mi yalad li es ela, who has borne me these? For I was isolated and barren, thinking that the seed was going to waste, but these, who has raised them? Blessed be his name. Isn't that incredible? So a couple should never think that this is just a mindless act. No, this is something holy. And if a couple is to never be mindless or casual, it always has to be with intentions for the sake of heaven, that they are realizing their unity together as a couple. Adam and Chava were really an androgynous being, and then they were separated. They started out back to back, and Hashem brought them face to face. And that is the ultimate level of holiness, where the couple is fused in mind, body, and spirit for the sake of Hashem. And that brings a holy garment down for their child. And that brings holy souls into the world, even if it doesn't come down as a physical child. Now, if the person sanctifies himself, he will bring forth a holy garment for the neshama of his child, thereby enabling the child to serve Hashem more readily. And you should know the Rebbe has his own personal diary, and he writes something amazing about the Rambam. He says, Ad kama gadol kayach kiddush b'shas tashmish, efshar lirais Rabbi Maimon aviv shel Harambam. You can see how great is the power of sanctification during the marital union from the case of Rabbi Maimon, the father of the Rambam. Shaharei nishmas Harambam lehaisa nishama me'elam ha'atzilas. The Rambam's soul was not from the world of Atzilas. V'af al pichein, al yidei kiddush Rabbi Maimon, higia Harambam lezeh, shehisig ad olam habriya. Nevertheless, through Rabbi Maimon's sanctification, the Rambam reached the level of comprehending up to the world of Bria. So here we find out that the Rambam, who was such a great leader that they said about him, Mimaisha ad Maisha laikam kamaisha, from Moses until Maimonides, nobody arose like Moshe, the Rambam. From Moshe to Moshe, no one like Moshe. And yet, his soul was not a soul of Atzilus, but his parents were so holy when they brought him into this world, that he had such a refined garment and his soul was so manifest. So this is the contribution of parents. Do they choose which soul the child gets? They don't choose which soul, but they do determine what level garment that the child has. And as parents grow and evolve and spiritually refine themselves, that has a spiritual refining effect on the entire family. I once heard Manus Friedman say, somebody was asking a question about, like, should you apologize to your children for, like, the way you acted back in the day? And he said, no, don't apologize. Just act differently. And your relationship evolves. That's true as in the parenting journey, and that's true spiritually. We're always growing, we're evolving. That spiritual refinement that we do for ourselves affects our entire family. Aval ha-neshama atzma, Hine lef amim nishmas adam givaya la'ein kate, ba'al hiyez b'nai she'adam nivzeh v'shafal chulei. But the soul itself, as distinct from its garment, is not affected by the parent's sanctification. In fact, it sometimes happens that the soul of an infinitely lofty person comes to be the son of an ignoble and lowly person. So some of the greatest people in history came from bad parents, which is, again, another lesson, because, you know, today everybody wants to, like, blame everything on their parents, and then the next thing to blame them on is the garment. That's why I can never get it together, you know? It's like, 1 second. But some of the greatest people in history have come from bad parents. And Hashem is the one who chooses the soul. Just like some, obviously, good parents don't want bad kids, some bad parents don't want good kids, but it's too bad. You're not the one who chooses. Hashem's the one who chooses. So the soul is determined directly from Hashem. In fact, Jewish history is replete with examples of holy people that came from bad people, such as Avraham Avinu, came from his father Terach, who was an idol worshiper, in general, just a terrible person. And if we look at the lineage of Mashiach, there were so many questionable unions, and these were holy people, but still questionable unions that led Mashiach's soul to come into this world. And that's because Hashem allows the dark side, the Klipa, to have a certain say on when some souls come into the world. They say, this holy soul, you get to determine which parents you're going to send it to. Now, the other side hopes that this soul will not have a chance, that this soul will become a wicked person. And when such a holy soul sins, it generates a lot of life energy for the other side. So they're hoping that this soul won't stand a chance. And they send this holy soul down when it seems like it won't have a chance. Terach, here, take it. And it became Abraham. Abraham arose out of this union, and he was the person who spread Hashem's unity into this world. Before him, he was only God of heavens until Abraham came and spread the awareness of Hashem into this world. So sometimes very great people come to be children of very lowly people. K'maisha kasav ha-arizal, kol zeh b'likutei Torah parshas vayera uv'tamei mitzvahs parshas bereishis. All this has been explained by Rabbi Yitzchak Luria of blessed memory in Likutei Torah on parshas vayera and in tamei ha-mitzvahs on parshas bereishis. Thus, the physical world of which parents are a part can in no way affect the soul's spiritual rank. Even the statement of the Zohar that the essential factor regarding the state of the soul is the holy manner of conduct during sexual union pertains only to the soul's garment. The soul itself, with all its various levels, emanates from above. We finished chapter 2, and let's do a chapter summary. So we started off this chapter saying that the second soul that each Jewish person has is literally part of Hashem above. Proof from the Torah is Vayipach ba'apav nishmas chayim. Hashem blew into the first man's nostrils a soul of life. Where does somebody blow from? Their innermost space. The Jewish soul comes from Hashem's innermost space. We also come from Hashem's thoughts, as it says, Yisrael alu b'machasheva. Israel has arose in thought. What is thought? It's our own reality. It's Hashem's inner reality. That's where the Jewish soul comes from. And furthermore, Jewish people are called children unto Hashem. Where does a child come from? A child comes from the deepest essence of his father. That seed that starts out as just a spiritual potential in the father's brain, the very essence. And so now we're looking at this soul that literally comes from Hashem. It comes from his wisdom. We said he and his wisdom are one. We talked about Kabbalah and the Rambam, and how even according to the Kabbalah, from a certain lens, the Rambam's opinion holds true, that he and his wisdom are one. We all come from Hashem. Now that we know that we all come from Hashem, from Chachma Ila'ah, the supernal wisdom, and then we look around and we say, one second, there are people who look very, very holy. They surely look like they come from Chachma Ila'ah. And there are people who look nowhere like the supernal wisdom. So why the disparity of souls? Oh, and that's because, let's go back on this example of a child coming from his father's brain. Yes, they all start out as that one drop, but then it fleshes out 9 months of gestation to become parts of the body as low as even the toenails. And that's true with us spiritually. We all start out in Chachma Ila'ah, but we come through the gestation of the world and we take on different consciousnesses. And some of us come down with a very, very lowly consciousness, even that of a toenail. So yes, we come from Chachma Ila'ah, but we might have this consciousness of a toenail. First of all, our essence never changed. That original seminal point that created the toenail is intimately connected with it. So no matter what, the essence of every soul, no matter how low its consciousness, is truly godly. But aside from that, in this world, if we have a diminished consciousness, how do we raise up our consciousness so that we can connect to our deepest space and manifest and radiate holiness? That we can literally radiate with the fact that we are godly and part of Hashem? That's by connecting to the brain of the child. Jewish people are one body. And some of us have never taken on the lower consciousness. Some of us identify with the father like the brain identifies with the father's brain. And when we connect with a tzaddik who has that consciousness of Hashem, then holiness is radiating through us. And that's why our sages taught us that whoever cleaves to a Talmud Chacham, to a Torah scholar, is like he's cleaving literally to the Shekhinah. Because by through connecting to these holy people who have this deepest awareness of Hashem, it allows us to connect to our own deepest root in Chachma Ila'ah, where he and his wisdom are one. So now what about somebody who is against the Torah scholars? What about someone who rebels and intentionally sins against them? Do they have no connection? Do they have no source of nurture? Are they like a toenail that's cut off? No. They always are connected. But the way they receive the nurture through the souls of the Talmid Chachamim is from a hind part, an external aspect. They get nurture, but you don't see holiness radiating through them because they're back to back. They have not been in this way of pleasure, of face to face. Now let's look at the Zohar that talks about the child's soul coming from the parents, and they determine what level soul. If they conducted themselves in a holy manner during the marital union, that they get a holy soul. And if not, then they get a lowly soul. Oh, one second. It's not the actual soul that the Zohar is talking about. It's talking about the garment of the soul. The garment of the soul is what manifests the soul in this world. And because it's so deeply intertwined and has this relationship of oneness with the soul, it's what the soul expresses itself through. The Zohar calls it the soul. But it's not the actual soul. It's the garment of the soul. And parents, through their holiness, can acquire a holy garment for their child's soul. And if they do that, it makes the way they do the mitzvahs easier for them. It allows them to accept beneficence from heaven in a better way. But the level of the soul, that is determined only from Hashem. And in fact, sometimes a very holy, lofty soul comes to be the child of ignoble and lowly parents. So that's the end of chapter 2. And this is actually our last class until after Pesach, which is going to be Bezrat Hashem, May 8th, I think, is our next class. Yes.